It's Chris-a-mania, brother.
That's a great question. Look at you, man, with the powerful questions.
This is the Chris Van Vliet Show. Chris Van Vliet Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Van Vliet.
Well, here we go. Welcome to another download of the Chris Van Vliet Show. I'm Chris Van Vliet. That's why the show's named the Chris Van Vliet Show. Thank you for the lovely introduction there from Justin Roberts. And man, what a conversation we have with this one. I say it in the interview, but Jim Ross was the soundtrack to my formidable years growing up. I mean, when I really dove into wrestling and really became obsessed with it during the Attitude Era. And it's amazing now hearing his voice 20-something years later for me on AEW. This was such a privilege and an honor to sit at the learning tree that is Jim Ross and hear his very open and honest takes about everything and hear these great stories. So a big thanks to him for that. And also thanks to his podcast co-host, Conrad Thompson, who coordinated this interview and made it happen. So thank you, Conrad. And if you haven't heard their podcast yet, actually, if you haven't heard their podcast yet, I'm very surprised because it's very, very good. Grilling JR is a must listen. I highly recommend it. It's a 5-star podcast. And apparently, according to you guys, so is mine. So thank you for the awesome 5-star reviews that you guys have been leaving on Apple Podcasts. I've said it, the last couple weeks, I guess, although the show's only 3 weeks old. So I guess I've been saying it the last week and a half that I will read a 5-star review on every single episode. As my way of saying thank you and also a way of saying, hey, keep those 5-star reviews rolling in because it really helps us a lot on Apple Podcasts. ECQ92 writes, my inspiration. Wow, what a title. Thank you. Chris, I don't remember how I stumbled across your YouTube channel, but I'm so glad that I did. You are truly an inspiration to me. I graduated with a bachelor's degree in mass media communications. By the way, so did I. And I aspire to be an entertainment journalist and reporter such as yourself. I'm also a huge wrestling fan such as yourself. Your style of interview is such a breath of fresh air with regards to what we're used to seeing, and I really love it. I enjoy your work, your content, your talent, your drive, and ambition. Thank you for being someone that I can proudly look up to. Wow, that's a humbling review to read. So thank you for leaving the great review. I'm super glad that doing what I do and the conversations that I have with these wrestlers can inspire you in some sort of small way. And I will say this to you, keep after it. There's no reason that you can't achieve whatever it is that you want to do. I mean, I'm living proof of that. So keep those 5-star reviews coming, and I will keep reading them on the show. We will get to the chat with JR in just a second, but I got to let you know the Chris Van Vliet Show is brought to you by Green Roads. And I say that because not all CBD products are created equal. I mean, we've heard a lot about CBD over the last year or so. A lot of companies popping up out of nowhere, pretending they have great CBD products. A lot of them don't even have CBD in them. But Green Roads is a pharmacist-founded company dedicated to improving the lives of people who take it. I take it frequently. It's really helped a lot with their CBD oil, just a couple of drops under the tongue. But all their products are awesome. It's just the CBD oil for me has been the best. And it tastes a lot, surprisingly better than you would think. And people say, well, what's it like? What's it feel like? Well, first of all, it doesn't really feel like anything. That'd be like saying, like, what's an aspirin feel like? It just feels like your headache went away after like 20 or 30 minutes. Kind of hear like your brain's going like 1,000 miles an hour. Some CBD oil brings it down, it slows it down. Not instantly, but over the course of, 20, 30 minutes, you think back and you go, I am feeling a lot more calm than I was feeling. Use my code Chris15 to get 15% off your order at greenroadsworld.com. 15% off with Chris15 at greenroadsworld.com. The CVV show also brought to you by the microphone that I'm holding and speaking into right now from Samson Technologies. Their podcast equipment has made the show sound as good as it does just however many episodes we're in right now. I think it's 17 episodes in. 17 episodes in less than 3 weeks. Yeah, we were just pumping these things out. Go to samsontech.com to check out their full lineup. I can't emphasize enough how great this conversation with Jim Ross was. He is such a living legend. It's amazing. He talks about it here. He's 67 years old. He says he still has a lot more in the tank. I personally can't wait to hear what that is, especially as they head into weekly television this fall on TNT with AEW. But enough about me and enough about me talking about this interview. Let's just get to it. Please enjoy my incredible, amazing conversation with the one, the only, JR, Jim Ross. It's such a pleasure to sit down with you. Thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Good to be with you.
Before you got hired by AEW, were you looking for, you know, to get back into the wrestling business or do this full time?
Oh, I was still in the wrestling business.
The New Japan?
WWE.
Yeah, okay.
My WWE contract ended at the end of March of this year. And then I knew I wasn't going to renew it because I was inactive. You know, players want to play.
Sure.
And so I wasn't being utilized. For example, in 2018, I worked twice. I went to Saudi Arabia for about 8 hours, and I went to New York City to do Raw 25. So I wasn't being utilized. And the handwriting was on the wall that apparently some of the powers that be there perceived I was too old or couldn't get my job done any longer. So I knew that I didn't have a home there in that respect. Mm-hmm. And I'm not the kind of guy that's, okay, I'll sit home and take my money. That's just not my style. That's just the next step of, you know, that's the aging process or getting out of the game process. And that's just not me. So I wasn't looking, but, you know, I met Tony Khan a couple of years ago. So we had a good relationship already established, but I didn't have any idea at that time when we met in Long Beach. He came out with the New Japan shows, he and Alex Marvez, that we would be working together. So it just worked out. Fate was a good thing for me. I say that Tony Khan saved my wrestling life, and I believe that, because I got back in the game and doing what I love to do. And so that's kind of the thing in a nutshell, but there's a lot of side stories to all that stuff.
Sure.
But it's been a really good blessing for me, quite frankly.
Do you feel like your announcing style is different now that you're in AEW?
Well, announcing style should always be predicated by the product you see on the monitor. So I'm gonna announce in the most realistic way that I can to help to suspend disbelief as best I can, no matter who I'm working for or working with. Some products are just more conducive to a sports-oriented, not sports entertainment-oriented entity. So that's kind of, I don't think I'm going to change a lot. The orders from headquarters there with Tony Khan and his group are, they want an athletic presentation. So, you know, there's two sides to that issue. I love that concept. Let's go an athletic presentation. But I got to have a canvas. You know, you got to have, that's what you're going to be seeing in the ring is athletic competition.
Right.
And so it's a two-way street. But nonetheless, my style is not going to change a hell of a lot. As a matter of fact, it might be a little bit retro in some areas. But the pace, the tenor, the feel, that doesn't go away. That doesn't change.
But a lot of what's going on in WWE is they're not even calling what's in the ring. They're not calling what's on the monitor.
I think it's a real tune-out for the viewer that if you're seeing action, you're seeing movement, and your eyes are watching this movement, and your brain is processing what you're seeing, then it becomes a massive disconnect when the announcers are telling backstory while action is ongoing.
Yeah.
That'd be nothing different than Joe Buck on Fox Sports talking about a backstory or what round a guy got drafted in or what his birthday is or how many brothers and sisters he has while the ball's in play.
Yeah.
It's so ludicrous to even say that because that would never happen.
Yeah.
But why have we allowed that to happen in wrestling is beyond me. The words have got to support the audio. The audio's got to support the video, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And sometimes in TV wrestling, in a lot of companies, that doesn't happen. So it's not I don't think it's a good thing. It's a bad trend,
sure.
I believe, quite frankly.
Did you need to reach out to WWE when your contract was done and say, I just want to let you guys know, I'm planning to go to AEW? Well,
I didn't know where I was going.
Okay.
I knew I wasn't going to return.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't going to have another year of inactivity. At my age, these are moments that are fleeting. In my view, without sounding, you know, too melancholy, I just felt like that I had to find other things to do. And I had, you know, like podcasting's a big thing. I'm writing a second book. You know, I'm I'm a member now of the, signed a contract recently with the Simon & Schuster's Speakers Bureau.
Wow.
So I had plenty of things on the table to do.
Sure.
But the wrestling part of getting back in a wrestling company was not really a high priority. I thought my wrestling ship had sailed, unfortunately, and I wasn't happy about it, but what else are they going to go do, right? And then Tony Khan and AEW came along, and that's been a blessing because now I'm back in the hunt, as I said, and I'm happy.
Yeah.
And I get a chance to contribute. I get a chance to play it forward for some of these young kids who, when I get to the arena, anytime we do TV, I feel like Morgan Freeman in Shawshank Redemption teaching Andy how to get out of prison. But it's, these kids, they're dying for information.
Sure.
And because I had some luck, was recruiting some good talent, good guys, they want to know what traits I saw sometimes, or what made you like The Rock the first time you met him, or whatever. So it's just it's a fun thing. It's like coaching. I like coaching. That's probably what I would have done if I had not got into broadcasting in the wrestling business.
With helping out this young talent, you were the guy who came up with these amazing nicknames that really helped talent get over.
Yeah, lucky.
The Bionic Redneck, The Game, or the, you know, what are some of your other favorites?
Oh, gosh.
The Texas Rattlesnake.
Oh, yeah. I did Austin's podcast this week.
Yeah.
I did Austin's podcast.
It aired this week, yeah.
It aired this week. Yeah. And he said, I got to thank you for Texas Rattlesnake. I said, you did sell a lot of shirts for that one, didn't you? He said, yeah, quite a few. So, you know, it's good. The great one was the name that Rock thought about, and I threw it out there, and it worked.
Did he got approval, though, I think, from Muhammad Ali or Muhammad Ali's family, didn't he?
The great one was Gretzky.
Oh, that's right.
And but the Muhammad Ali was everybody's. No athlete that I've ever met was not at all Muhammad Ali.
Sure.
Quite frankly. So, and I had my experience with him, so it was all great. I spent 3 days with him one time in New Orleans.
Wow.
We shared a suite. And he came down for a Mid-South wrestling event down in the Superdome. So we got to be buddies, and to the extent you can be buddies. So
yeah.
A guy like that. He's a legend. You know, he's just, you know, it's hard to believe you're talking to him sometimes. It's pretty cool. So
I don't feel like in the era of WWE right now, you could just throw out a nickname without someone's approval.
Oh, you couldn't.
Yeah.
A lot of my stuff is very organic.
Yeah.
And feel. You know, the Texas Rattlesnake was, I said later on that rattlesnakes don't make good corporate pets. And, you know, things like that. It's a feel deal. You know, Steve asked me about that. You know, I didn't write anything down to say, because that's like the wrestlers today spending endless hours seemingly on going over a 5-minute match or an 8-minute match or a 10-minute match or whatever a match. Mm-hmm. It's that memorization of your act, not knowing that what you're committing to memory, by the way, may not work. If that doesn't work and get the crowd flipped, then what do? Well, you got to go to plan B.
Yeah.
So then the question is, do you have a plan B?
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I think about that deal. It's got to be a feel thing for me. And, you know, like, I got in my rhythm, my best rhythm with this company, I think, in the middle of the All In Vegas this year.
Because Double or Nothing. Yeah.
Double or Nothing. I'm sorry. Double or Nothing. Yeah. And because we had the Cody match and Dustin match, which is off the charts. It might have been a little graphic to some people, could be, but nonetheless, it was an amazing performance.
Yeah, told a great story.
Yeah, and then you have the two of the best tag teams in the entire world, and arguably the best tag team in the world, the Young Bucks, and the Lucha Brothers. They have great chemistry. It's almost seamless. It's a little bit like watching Flair and Steamboat. It's just, there's no scenes. It's just a continual smooth flow. That's so real, and you get lost in the story. And then we close the show with Jericho and Omega, which was amazing. And then you have Jon Moxley sauntering in, and I didn't even know Jon Moxley was even in the building.
No.
No, I swear to God. So when he came out, it was like one of those real cool moments for a guy in my role that you can really get into something, because you have not preconditioned yourself. Okay, now how am I going to act when Jon Moxley comes out? What am I going to say?
Yeah.
What am I going to do? All that time is wasted time, because you're going to do what, at least I'm going to do, what it feels right. without sounding arrogant. It's a moment. I'm a fan. I'm still a fan. So as long as I'm still a fan, I can retrieve that emotion, then we're good to go. So
and that's why they hired you.
Well, I hope. They got, for some reason, you know, maybe they had to fulfill their AARP commitments. I'm not real sure. But nonetheless, I'm sure as hell glad they did.
Do you not know the finishes to matches?
Sometimes I hear them in passing in a conversation. But everybody there knows, including Cody, who normally I meet with every hour and a half, 2 hours for every before every show during the week. He knows I don't want to know him.
Wow.
Because I'd rather react organically. I'd rather react in a real way. And that might not be the way you want to do it with some broadcasters who have less experience. You may not trust their judgment. Pardon me. You may not trust their judgment yet. Mm-hmm. And I think in my situation, at least you can, I think you can trust me.
Well, I would think so with 45 years experience.
Yeah, really, isn't that right?
There was all these stories in WWE of Vince being in your ear or someone being in your ear, commentator's ears, telling you guys what to say. Mm-hmm. Who's in your ear in AEW?
Nobody.
At all?
No. Keith Mitchell is in my ear to count me in and out of the segment.
Sure, that's pretty common in TV.
Normal stuff.
Yeah.
And after that, if he has a suggestion, can you mention Chicago? Mention Memorial or Labor Day weekend? Mention something. He may do that, but that's how quick it is. Mm. Mention Chicago. Boom. But hardly nothing. And it allows us, I told these other guys this, you know, you guys have not worked in a system as have I, where your alpha male in your life is telling you what to say. Mm. Sometimes... You know, we all make mistakes in judgment, but I don't work well that way. I can't be creative and enlighten and intrigue and add all the things you want to add if you're yelling at me. Because I got to process this information. Do I process this most powerful man in my business life and maybe my personal life yelling and screaming at me on occasion? Does it take you out of your game? Of course it does.
Yeah.
And you know, I know Taz didn't like it, and Mick Foley didn't like it, and they couldn't handle it. This wasn't for them, and I can understand that. I just grew up with a father that was much like Vince, very demanding, very alpha male-ish. Then I worked for Cowboy Bill Watts, who may be the most alpha male of the whole damn crew. You know, 6'3", 300 pounds, and he was an accomplished street fighter. He liked to push. He's a bully. And then when I got to Vince, going through Dusty, who was really easy to work with, and Ole Anderson, who wasn't, by the time I got to Vince, I was battle-tested, man. Mm. You can't say much is going to piss me off. It'll piss me off a little bit, but nonetheless, it's not going to affect my work. We did a show one time where, I can't remember where it was, it was on Raw. Lawler and I were out there broadcasting, and Vince says to me to say something, and it was ridiculous, and I didn't say it. And during the time he told me to say it, and I was holding out on him, he was screaming like crazy.
And you're still trying to call the match.
Oh yeah, I'm on live television. Yeah. At least in my ear, you know. God damn it, I said this. Okay, all right. So bottom line is I didn't say it. And then we go to commercial break, and he comes on my headset, and in real hushed tones, like he's doing golf. You know, hey JR, yeah. Did you hear me to tell you to say it? Yes, sir. Well, it's a goddamn good thing he didn't, because it had been wrong.
Wow.
Well, I knew it had been wrong. We already talked about this. He forgot we already talked about this matter, and we weren't going to go there.
Yeah.
But he'd forgotten, because all the hubbub and the traffic around him, he's like the honey, and a lot of the guys that work there are the bees. Mm-hmm. They swarm him. Because they want to be seen.
Sure.
They want FaceTime with the chief. So I didn't say it. And we laughed about it after the show. I tell him, you're slipping, and you know, you forgot this and that. But our relationship is much better than people perceive it to be. You know, I didn't like some of his taste and creative that affected me, to be honest with you. There's some of it that I thought was a waste of time. And I didn't care to be involved in skits and get beat up. It wasn't a getting beat up part. I didn't like I Well, would you have liked it if you were winning? Well, no, I didn't. Wouldn't like it then either.
What are we doing?
I'm not good at it.
That, like when you were in the Kiss My Ass Club, the look on your face told the whole story.
Well, it got over. It was disgusting.
It got over.
It was disgusting. It was a heel move. It was disgusting. Of course, the strategic thing for Vince was he picked Oklahoma City, where my family was there in attendance, not having any idea that tonight Dad's going to kiss Mr. McMahon's ass.
Yeah.
And his face is going to be driven into his glutes. Some of those opportunities I just didn't like. And a lot of that is ego-driven, to be honest with you. I thought that, we were getting beyond that, and who were we getting over? Mm-hmm. So I got nailed by the Undertaker. That's cool. Kurt Angle did something to me. Vince, I kissed his ass. Bischoff broke a cinder block over my head. I had to put Michael Cole over. I can't remember. I know Jack Swagger got me in the ankle lock. Got a little carried away.
It's like they would pick on you for easy heat.
Well, I was over.
Yeah, well, of course, they're always over.
That's the deal. Without sounding egocentric, the character JR was over to the audience. So a villain, a heel, doing something nefarious to JR was not going to be well accepted.
Yeah,
which is the exact emotion you want to solicit from a villain.
Yeah.
But I just got, my deal was, and I tell creative this, that, you guys spend so much time trying to figure out what Vince is going to like so you can write something he likes, and he likes bathroom humor, and he likes JR being made a fool of or utilized in these storylines. If you didn't have, if you had your head out of your ass, which they told me I have my head in my ass in the Dr. Heine skit, you would have talent that were over. Mm. You would have talents that were over on their own that didn't need me to be their rub.
Yeah.
And it's a fragile dynamic when your TV announcer is one of the key components to give baby or heels a rub.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. So I didn't feel like we were helping the other talents. All those guys and gals sitting in the back, they weren't doing a damn thing. They're going to go on the road and try to sell tickets and make more money, provide for their families, all the good stuff that we talk about. They're sitting there, and my fat ass is in the ring. It made no sense to me.
Yeah.
I didn't need the ego rush. I didn't need the love. I didn't need the rub. I didn't need any of that.
Yeah.
But let me sit there and describe it and be your soundtrack. And so that was my disconnect there.
So are you saying that you don't want to be part of storylines in AEW?
No, I don't. I have no idea. I'm going to do some interviews.
Sure.
Some sit downs, which I love doing, and it'll help get the talent over.
Like Sean Spears interview.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And there'll be more coming down the road, but I don't have any desire at this stage. There's no reason for it. Where do you go with it? Mm-hmm. What do you do with it? Every angle on television has got to lead to something.
Yeah.
My angle with me involved isn't leading to anything.
Yeah.
We're not going to have a match.
Yeah.
I'm not doing it. And it's not, I'm 67 years old. I kind of done this stuff.
Sure.
So let somebody else do it.
So with all that said you still have a whole bunch more wrestling left in you. How long do you think you can do this for?
Oh, till I can do this for, I follow the principles of the great broadcasters that, Keith Jackson became a friend of mine, and, he worked until he called his shots. He got out when he wanted to get out. Mm-hmm. Somebody asked me this question the other day. I said, what are you going to do when your three-year contract's up? You'll be 70. I said, well, if I'm smart, I'm going to try to get a renewal. I'm going to try to keep working. In my role, as long as I can continue to recognize situations and scenarios through my experience, I know the game. It's like being the skinniest kid at fat camp. I know the game of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And so I hope I can contribute for years to come. Because I'm not buying into, you got to retire. It used to be the old days where you get your Social Security at 62. Or you could get Medicare at 65.
Yeah.
And all of them's terrible. Really, there's no great reward to get to draw your Social Security in our country these days. The government's done a real good job of screwing up the common guy's living and existence. Maybe the good thing about that is that people like you are becoming entrepreneurs and going out on their own and doing their stuff.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where we are right now in this country. So yeah. I like that, quite frankly, Chris. But golly, it's challenging. So my goal is to do a good enough job in the next 3 years and see this company grow from a franchise or an expansion team to a Super Bowl contender. But the issue that a lot of folks are saying, are you going to put, I even saw headlines, is AEW going to put WWE out of business? I'm thinking, are you crazy?
Yeah.
That's ludicrous. That's not even remotely feasible. That's like saying the XFL is going to supplant the NFL as America's football league. They're not, but they don't have to make a profit.
Sure.
The AEW brand doesn't have to do anything with WWE, be affected by it one way or the other. All we got to worry about is ourselves.
Yeah.
We've got to get better. We got to get better at everything we do, and that has nothing to do with paying attention to what the other guys across the street are doing with the big yard and the big dog.
Well, I think people don't realize that you can be fans of both. Mm-hmm. We could watch Raw, and then we can watch AEW, and we can watch SmackDown and enjoy it all.
I agree. Yeah.
And I think people seem to think like you're either with us or you're against us.
Yeah, no, it's silly. Wrestling fans should band together and promote wrestling. Because for years, we've all had this uphill pull of being a wrestling fan. Oh, you watch that stuff? Yeah. When I was a little kid, I got teased about it all the time.
Of course.
Now, luckily, I was a decent athlete, and I was a bigger kid than a lot of my buddies at small Oklahoma high school. So a lot of them give me a pass because I was on the football team, the basketball team, president of student body, blah, blah, blah. So they accepted me because I wasn't a nerd, but because they looked at wrestling as being a product for people with too much time on their hands, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And so I got a pass on that. But I've had anybody that's watching wrestling, have ever watched wrestling, and their family, sometimes our families are the ones of the worst because my dad would say, "Why do you watch that stuff?"
Oh, my parents said the same thing.
I think everybody's parents said the same thing. What's it hurting? I also watch John Wayne movies knowing he's not a real cowboy. I really do. But I get lost in the character of his presentation.
Yeah.
Wrestling's not doesn't drive you to drinking. It doesn't drive you to drugs. It doesn't make you be a abuser.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's a fictional entity, unlike any other television episodic fictional show. It's just that these guys are real athletes.
Yeah.
They do their own stunts, and they have no off season.
Yeah.
There's a lot of amazing things that these gentlemen and ladies do that makes me proud to still be affiliated with it. So it's a labor of love for me, Chris, quite frankly.
I think people will think your most famous call is Mick Foley going off the cell, but what's your favorite call?
Well, it'd be hard to say. That's like saying, akin to saying, which are your daughters or your favorite? The older one or the younger one?
And, do you have a few?
Oh, yeah, sure. There's matches. There's some matches that I called trying to think. There was a match back at WCW, Dr. Death and Terry Gordy against the Steiners. I thought was amazing. And I love that match. Hard-hitting, logical, mano a mano. The guys knew that they were in for an interesting night, and they look forward to that because most tag teams that dealt with Doc and Gordy in the Steiners always had the reservations that they're going to work very firm, very stiff, and be very physical, and this is not going to be an easy night at the office. And so that's kind of what we saw with that deal.
Yeah.
I loved that one. I loved WrestleMania 13, Austin and Brett.
Yeah.
I thought was outstanding, still do. I love that one. I love, there was a Sean, when Sean came back from his hiatus, we finally convinced him to come back, and I wanted him to come back in the locker room and be a role model, even if he didn't want to wrestle, because we were paying him a lot of money at that time, like $750 a year, and he was healing from his back injury and his ruffle feathers and all kinds of things. So that was Sean, and when Sean came back, it was amazing to me that he didn't miss a beat.
Yeah.
He had a bad haircut. I remember that.
I remember that,
too. A Dutch boy looking haircut or whatever the hell it was. But he showed his greatness.
Yeah.
He didn't miss a beat. And he and Hunter had an amazing match. I thought it was one of my favorite matches to call. You know, the Foley-Undertaker match was another one. I didn't know the finish. I had no idea he was going to be thrown off the cell.
What if he landed on you?
I don't know. But what if? He died. Yeah. That's another thing. So, yeah, so it wasn't good. The WWE, and we all dodged a bullet that night. If somebody had asked me before the show, if this is your call, would you approve this deal for Mick? And I would say no.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see any margin for error.
Yeah.
There's no precedent for this move. And, you know, you got a table, and then the concrete floor is what breaks your fall.
Yeah.
It's a pretty sudden stop.
Yeah.
So that was another one that was a good, that was a memorable. Obviously, we had to change, Lawler and I changed on the fly with our psychology when Rock and Hogan fought at WrestleMania 18.
That's my favorite match of all time.
Yeah.
I was there, and your call
on
it.
Oh, good.
I loved it because it was so evident that the crowd had turned on Rock and were cheering Hogan.
Yeah.
You know, when they were exchanging blows, and it's boos for the Rock cheers for Hogan.
Yeah, it takes you out of your game, too, because that's not the road you were traveling as a broadcaster. And so we called an audible and went right on about our business seamlessly.
Yeah.
And it was a really amazing experience. So I also thought that the Undertaker Shawn Michaels match at the first Hell in a Cell they had was really terrific and memorable. It's funny how a lot of these gimmick matches, they call them, are being utilized, but the wrinkles added to them are limited.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying basically is you go back and look. Go all the way back to the first Hell in a Cell. It's hard to say that any other Hell in a Cell was better than the first one. Mm-hmm. Maybe it was because it was new. I don't know. But also it's because you had two Hall of Fame guys and they're doing their thing. So I think that some of these, we needed some freshening up, quite frankly. But I enjoyed all those matches.
Yeah.
The Attitude Era was amazing, too, because we had a lot of real good talents that a lot of them I'd recruited. You know, we had that one class. I love to talk about this class because it's like a Hall of Fame class that we signed in one class, John Cena. We signed Randy Orton. We signed this guy, big old country boy from South Dakota named Brock Lesnar. We signed Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
He's now a major movie star. God bless him. He's a good dude.
Yeah,
and the best athlete of the group was Shelton Benjamin.
Wow! Yeah, what a group.
So that was the deal, and they all got to work. They all were on the ring crew. Brock Lesnar became the foreman of the ring crew because he could drive a pickup truck better than anybody else.
I don't think people can picture Brock Lesnar building a ring.
No, he did. He did.
Wow.
Oh yeah, they all did, and they swept, they cleaned up, they paid their dues, and not that they weren't being hazed. These are chores that we had to do that we didn't have the budget to hire a janitor.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to do this.
Yeah.
And if you, the collaborative effort, you're going to be out of here in no time. Yeah. And they were.
Yeah.
But give them some responsibility. Let them know that this is still a free ride. You're not on scholarship here. You know, and Lesnar's making I paid Lesnar more money than any rookie that we ever signed. And because if anybody could see, he was obviously can't miss.
Sure.
One of those guys. Unless he imploded, we weren't going to have any issues with him getting over.
Oh, yeah.
Unless he just was if his social skills were not evolved to some degree where he could get along with people, and that was an issue. He didn't like traveling. Mm. So I used to talk about, you got to trade, there's a trade-off here, pal. We can get your ass on the farm, and you can farm all the rest of your life, but you're not going to make this kind of money.
Yeah.
If you want this kind of money, there's got to be some sacrifices made along the way, including time invested.
When I tweeted out that I was going to be interviewing you, I got a barrage of by gods. Yeah. How do you feel that that's like always going to be attached to your name?
It's all right. Something.
Yeah.
It's something to, you know, it's either that or slobber knocker or, you know, you got beat like a government mule or restaurant quality ass whipping, all that stuff. You know, that was my.
Tougher than a $2 steak.
$2, yeah. Tougher than a $2 steak. So, and I'll say that I used to say that on TV toward the end of my run when these little gifts are coming out.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's I get all kinds of little ugly steak pictures and gifts and burnt and charred and little thin ones and big old thick ones or whatever. So it's people enjoy that. And, you know, one of my best-selling T-shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com is They Killed Him.
Yes.
On that Mick Foley shirt. I got a buddy of mine, Orlando Brown, plays right tackle for the Baltimore Ravens. I think right or left tackle. He's a starter. OU kid. Great kid. And Orlando wears that T-shirt under his pads during the games.
Wow.
They Killed Him. That's his mindset. He was a killer. He's an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
You're not going to get my quarterback, no matter what happens. So those are fun deals. But the slobber knocker is probably the most.
Of course.
That's probably the most, whatever. It's what, most prominent. I mean,
where did you come up with that?
It's an old Southern football term that was applicable. And when the games were covered by the newspaper, print, it was a print game, before radio got even big time. And these players didn't wear face masks on their helmets, so their faces were unprotected. And they slobber was the liquid
spittle.
So if you got hit in the face hard enough, there it would go. The spittle would fly.
Wow.
So slobber knocker. And that's where – so that it's just an old term. This, you know, I heard this when I was in junior high. You know, you guys ready for this week? It's going to be a slobber knocker. And I don't know, what does that mean? So I figured it out.
Yeah.
And started to – then when I got broadcasting, I started using it. And also all those things just became my little handles, it made me different.
Yeah.
And, you know, to my different being different was a blessing and a curse. I always thought that my accent cut me from the herd. I sounded different. When I got the Bell's palsy, which people can see, I can't smile, and I can't whistle because I can't pucker. Hmm. And that was a blessing because it made me, it even gave my diction a little bit more of a uniqueness.
Hmm.
But for television executives, it wasn't my friend. You know, the fact that, you know, I'm a round-faced guy, chubby guy with Southern accent, can't smile, he doesn't belong on television. Says who? Says you. Says somebody that is looking at you're not looking at a focus group, because there's no focus group in the country is going to say that JR doesn't belong in the wrestling business.
Of course.
It's just not going to happen. That sounds egocentric for me to say, but that's
just a damn fact.
Our fans are that way.
Yeah.
They give a damn. They care. You know, we did a show here in Jacksonville, and I got another one coming up in Philadelphia, Rochester. We're going to book a lot of these little
Q&As. These are the live podcasts.
Grill
I love them. JR.
Yeah. Grill and JR. And
what's the one question people always want to ask you when you do that?
Like you did, what's my favorite match?
Yeah.
Or who's your favorite wrestler? Sometimes they ask more profound questions. I enjoy getting into, like, we just had a podcast regarding Vengeance 04, the pay-per-view Vengeance 2004. Yeah. And that was a big, big show for Chris Benoit. And most people in the last few years have been reluctant to even mention his name, mm-hmm. because of how he lived the last 48 hours of his life. And I'm not underscoring that as something beautiful. It's not. It's horrible. Worst thing I've ever encountered in my career, you know, other than Owen Hart dying in front of my very eyes in front of me, was the Chris Benoit thing, because I just never saw that coming. I considered him a good friend, and I helped him with his neck injury, and we got him the great surgery, paid him while he was off, took care of his needs, his family's needs. He got all his money, even though he couldn't work. It's the right thing to do for us, and we did the right thing. And so then... I don't know what happened. You know, I don't know if it was CTE. There's a million stories.
Sure. Yeah, well, we'll never know.
We're not going to know. All we know is that my friend Nancy, his wife, is dead. The little boy Daniel's dead. And then Chris, of course, committed suicide.
Yeah.
And to have him to even remotely think of a father murdering his son, you know, it's bad enough to think of a husband murdering his wife.
Mm-hmm.
That's bad enough,
yeah.
Obviously. But to take the life of your only son, your little son, with this lady, it was just unfathomable. I couldn't get my head around it. So, we talked about that, and that was a good show. But the questions that you're, back to your question, I have somebody will ask about every other show at least, should Chris Benoit belong in the Hall of Fame? And I say no. Because, and if he were here, he would say no. And here's why. The reason why is because Chris Benoit going to the Hall of Fame would be a major, major distraction.
Yes.
It would not be about the great matches he had in Japan or Mexico or in Calgary or in WWE or WCW or anywhere else. It would be about murder-suicide. Mm-hmm. So that becomes a focal point again. And I just don't think that would, he would, and I know, if I believe Chris, I could talk to him right now, he'd say, JR, you're right.
Yeah.
I don't recall, he was that kind of guy.
Yeah.
We don't know what set him off that day, but that was 2 days in the life of a guy that's 40 something years old.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not his demeanor.
Yeah.
We don't know why he did it, but we talked about that. And so the Benoit question comes up every now and then in various forms. But the audiences are so smart, they're so in tune that their questions have become better and better as these shows go on, because there's so much more information flow. There's content like you're creating. There's all these guys, the Meltzers and the Kellers, and all these guys got their businesses where they cover wrestling. And Mike Johnson at Pro Wrestling Insider does a great job. Jason Powell. There's all these guys do really, really good stuff. So now the fans have more content to sample.
Yeah.
So you know you can take a flight and you can be on, if you got Wi-Fi, you can catch up with all the wrestling business.
Yep.
On a decent flight, right?
Yeah, I do it all the time.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So, and you can follow your Twitter, your social media stuff.
Yeah.
And that's another thing that's a big deal. You know, you I saw you were getting questions about this discussion.
Yeah.
And I'm curious about it too. What are people going to ask? What are new questions I haven't had yet?
So. Yeah. Well, in your backstage role as a senior advisor, are you still scouting talent for AEW?
I make recommendations. I see talents that I've become inquisitive of.
Okay.
And I make suggestions to Cody and his team about talents. You know, there's talents I like that I would like to see work there. And not just because I perceive them being good in-ring performers, but the fact that they're going to enter the locker room with no poison.
Sure,
you know,
that's important.
That's one of the reasons I worked so hard to hire Mick Foley, is I knew that when Mick Foley got in, he'd be a positive influence to our locker room. He'd be a good role model. You know, he's not a drug guy, he wasn't a drunk. You know, the only thing he ever abused is his own body, you know, the bumps he took. But, you know, you get a guy like that in, he's patient enough to take time with the younger guys who've seen him on TV and think, you know, and they look up to him, or they should, as they should. And so he was the kind of guy that could come in there and contribute to that locker room morale. But that's, to me, is a big component here. I don't care how many you can do, how much high flying you can do, and, you know, you can do a 450 and you can do this and you can do that, but can he work? Can you perform? Can you make me want to watch you more, other than those indiscriminate moments on the high trapeze, flying trapeze, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that there's guys that I'd like to see here because, A, they're great athletes and they can perform, but also because they'll fit very much compatibly into our locker room community, which has a lot of diverse personalities in it, a lot of young guys. You know, I was talking to Joey Janela, he came to be on our show on Friday night here in Jacksonville, and I didn't realize he'd been in the Indies for 14 years.
Yeah.
14 years. It's a testament to him how dedicated and how much he loves wrestling.
Do you think he's one of the breakout stars of AEW?
He could be.
Who do you think, who's on your radar as being a breakout star?
MJF, probably top of the list.
Yes. People are familiar with the interview I did with him. He's quite the character.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. He loves it. He loves being a villain.
Yeah.
And he's sharp-witted, and he's a tough little guy, too. I said this on the air a couple of weeks ago in Orlando, or not Orlando, in Daytona, that he reminded me of a young Paul Heyman.
Mm.
And I worked with young Paul Heyman. I gave young Paul Heyman his break to get him on national television as my broadcast partner. And the WCW booking committee thought I was crazy, but they were celebrating because I took him off their hands. They no longer had to book him or manage him. He'll be my guy. And I don't regret that whatsoever. He was a great partner, and he's still doing good now with in his new role.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that works out.
Well, I want to be respectful of your time, so I have just one more question for you as we wrap things up. If someone comes to you and says, I want to do what you're doing, I want to have the career that Jim Ross had, what's the advice you have for an up-and-coming play-by-play commentator?
Practice, get reps, get a microphone in your hand or a headset on your head, volunteer. Don't look at these broadcasting gigs as paydays, because there's likely not going to be any paydays in them to any degree, maybe lunch. And I told someone, we ran Fort Smith, Arkansas every Wednesday night at the Jimmy Lott Sports Arena on Towson Avenue. I did enough promos for that to remember that the rest of my life. But I was refereeing down there. House is really bad. And the other town on Wednesday night was Baton Rouge. So Baton Rouge got the big stars, and Fort Smith got the leftovers. And I got paid that night in hot dogs. I got two hot dogs.
Two of them?
I refereed all. I was the only referee there. Helped put the ring up, take the ring down, pay my dues, and I got two hot dogs. And so then I said, well, could I get a Coke? And he said, yeah, that would be 50 cents. So I would have lost 50 cents in my pay that night by buying a Coke. And on the principle of things, I said, hell with that. I'll find something else.
I had a friend of mine that sent you some stuff and asked for some advice. And I'll never forget this as a fan. You said to him, make sure every near fall counts.
Yeah.
And I will never forget that now when I watch matches. You'll interrupt whatever you're saying to go, oh, in a near fall. Oh, I almost got him there.
Well, you don't know that's going to be the it.
Right. And I love that.
Yeah. And a lot of guys, that's the story we talked earlier about. Announcers doing backstory while action's ongoing.
Yeah.
That Joe Buck illustration earlier.
Yeah.
You hear it all the time, backstory. And in a WCW's, a WWE's case, it's not working. It's great that I understand that they've got all this money, and it's great. I'm happy for them. The better WWE does, the trickle-down theory will make it mean better results for all of us.
Yeah.
And when Andre and Hogan fought in WrestleMania 3, the Mid-South business picked up because the awareness of the product became paramount. Every local network affiliate wanted to do a wrestling story, especially the NBC affiliates, because NBC was so gangbusters on promoting Saturday Night's Main Event and wrestling in general, and WWE wrestling. So we just tagged along, and it worked. We had one of our better years because of the success WWE was having. It's a trend. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So wrestling was trending thanks to WWE's promotional machine and what they have booked with Andre and Hogan, the fact they're going to run a huge stadium at WrestleMania 3, all these firsts, and it became a topic of discussion. And so we took advantage of that. So all of a sudden now we got all of our guys on all of our local TVs in Mid-South doing interviews and showing their personality. And so all of a sudden then I started getting more personal appearances for them. And all these things just started coming about. And our business picked up. Then you would have radio stations contact us and say, hey, we'd like to do a promotion with you for the live event. Well, of course.
Yeah.
So it helped us. So the better WWE does, I hope they do great. I hope they have record years. The better all the rest of us that are in the wrestling business will do. It's important that I, in my role, what WWE does or does not do, what they say or they don't say, is irrelevant to me. In the standpoint that I'm not going to mention it on the air anyway. I'm not going to mention WWE on the air in a negative way, a positive way, no way. No reason to.
Yeah.
So, and I don't think we should engage in that stuff. You know, there's every now and then you'll get a little bit, little banner, little hand grenade here and there. Guys just can't resist themselves.
Sure.
But it's just, it's a wasted effort. We need to focus, we and AWE need to focus on what AWE is doing. nothing more, nothing less. Yeah. That should be our entire focus, to make this brand great as we can. Some of these young kids are going to be there, Chris, and they're going to be good. But we don't know how good they're going to be. And they don't know how good they're going to be. And matches like our show in Jacksonville, the one in Daytona, are important measuring sticks to see what some of these guys have got.
Yeah.
And now we're starting to see our heel and babyface roster starting to slowly evolve. And once we get the right jersey on everybody, it'll be a lot easier to watch.
Yeah.
Because you know who you want to cheer or don't, do yeah. or don't. And everybody has a role. You got to have a role. It's like my broadcast team with Excalibur and Alex Marvez. You know, Alex is the Jay Glazer kind of guy, giving you information, the backstory of things along those lines. And Excalibur is a very brilliant wrestling mind. He does a great job. I really enjoy
it. Sounds great, too.
Oh, yeah, he sounds terrific. So he's our wrestling expert because he was a former wrestler.
Sure.
So he'll be talking strategy and holes and how this works and things of that nature. And then I'm going to do what I do. So it's if we can all find our role and stay in our lane,
yeah.
So to speak, we're going to get better. Our goal is to be point on in Chicago at August 31st, and then take that momentum right into October when we premiere on TNT.
Yeah.
And that's the difference maker.
Yeah,
that's the deal where nobody's really talking about it. They're talking about senseless things like, you're gonna put WWE out of business and stuff. It's so stupid. I'm embarrassed when people say that. And I've been interviewed by guys said, you know, what? How much of a dent you think you put in their business? Not a damn bit.
Yeah.
Are you kidding? You think the XFL team in Dallas, coached by my friend Bob Stoops, is going to put a dent in the NFL? Not one bit. But he doesn't have to. That's not his job.
Yeah.
His job is to make his team competitive and entertaining and sell tickets.
Yeah.
And get TV ratings. So it's not a hard formula.
Well, once again, I want to be respectful of your time. I know you have
appreciate
a hard out. Thank you for this.
You're welcome, sure.
On behalf of wrestling fans everywhere, thank you for the memories over the years. You're the soundtrack to my childhood, and now you're the soundtrack to whatever age I am now. So,
yeah. Well, appreciate it. Thanks for being a good listener today. I had too much coffee, I think, this morning.
Oh my God, this was incredible.
So we got a lot of information.
We could honestly talk all day, but you've got a job to do.
I'm going to be talking all day. So yeah, you're right. It's going to be a good night. It's a really a unique venue. This, as the fans will see.
Yeah.
Doing it from an amphitheater.
Yeah.
And I know they worked all night getting that site ready, because there were four. When I last talked over there, I did a production meeting Friday night. We were 4 hours behind schedule because it's had to be revamped to do the ring and
well, because there's a stage here, which is different.
Yeah, and some people thought we're going to put the ring on the stage, and they're not. That's where the announcers are going to be.
Okay.
The ring's going to be in that pit down there.
Okay, cool.
So we'll see. It should look really cool. Also, yesterday, in the line of ticket sales, I think we have less than 200 tickets available.
Wow.
And a lot of them are sprinkled here, there, and yon, kind of a smattering. So the ticket sales are good. It'll look great. And, of course, the show in Chicago is already sold out.
Of course.
So,
yeah.
You know, we're looking good. And they'll soon be announcing the TVs are booked for pretty much the rest of 2019.
Wow.
So those venues will be released. And it becomes a strategic thing, you know. It's like... isn't it ironic that WWE decided to put their Evolve show on their network live against us? Coincidental? I don't. You know,
of course not.
We know it's not coincidental, folks.
Yeah.
So you say, well, why would they do that? Because they're the big dog in the yard, and they can't. And that's a bully mentality. You take liberties, and fans just have to decide which one they want to watch. And thank God, through all the ways of replays and streaming this and that, You can watch both of them.
Yep.
On the same night.
That's true.
So I don't know what they expected, how they were going to hurt us on that deal, but they obviously didn't do it because of, we had nothing to do with AEW. Come on. That's where you get offended, when you know you're being zoomed.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on. So what are you afraid of our little operation? Oh, we're not.
It's a pissant company, I believe.
You know, yeah. I heard the pissant.
Yeah.
Well, that pissant money sure good.
Oh, that's a great way to end it, Jim. Thank you again.
Okay, buddy.
I really appreciate it.
All right, Chris.
Well, there you have it, my friends. What a chat. with good old JR, Jim Ross. Big thank you to him for almost 50 minutes there of just knowledge and insight and awesomeness. So thank you to him for that. Thank you to his podcast co-host, Conrad Thompson, for coordinating this and making this happen. Grilling JR is the name of their podcast. You can check that out. You can check that out wherever you're listening to this podcast. And I appreciate you listening to this podcast as well. I love that JR is not only the voice of AEW and the voice of our childhood, but also a senior advisor for AEW, pulling some strings behind the scenes and really affecting what it is that we see on these pay-per-views and what we will be seeing on television when TNT starts up this fall with AEW television. A big thank you to Green Roads for sponsoring the show. Use my code Chris15 at greenroadsworld.com to get 15% off your order of CBD products. Also, thank you to Samson Technologies for making us sound as good as we do. And I mean, that's in the podcasting world, it's really just all about sound. You don't know what I look like right now, although I could look great. I could. Maybe I do. Maybe I'm not wearing anything at all. I don't know. But if you watch the YouTube video, you'll see what Jim Ross and I are wearing. Is he wearing his famous hat in this interview? Does it sound like he's wearing the hat? Just watch the video. You'll see. Of course he's wearing the hat. It's Jim Ross. We're doing a bunch of interviews. I'm in Jacksonville right now as I sit here. And once again, you can't see this because it's just a podcast, but I'm sitting here in my hotel room here in downtown Jacksonville. We just did an interview today with Kip Sabian, also did an interview with Darby Allin. Of course, this interview with Jim Ross, and we're doing many more at Fight for the Fallen tonight. So keep an eye out for those. Thank you so much for making this all possible. I'm absolutely loving doing these podcasts. Of course, I'm loving doing the YouTube channel. So the more you listen, the more you watch, the more we can do this. So to you, I say thank you.